Hi there, welcome to ET Markets Investor's Guide, a show about asset classes, market trends and investment opportunities. This is Atul PM. Tesla's announcement of entering the Indian market has brought the electric vehicle industry into the limelight. The government too is actively pushing for citizens to adopt electric vehicles to tackle pollution. Experts see e-vehicle sales in India hitting 6.3 million units per annum by 2027 from less than 380,000 last year. Companies such as Tata Motors and Motherson Sumi Systems are already pitching their focus on e-vehicles to investors. But the rise of e-vehicles will also threaten the multi-billion dollar automobile industry in India that is based on the internal combustion engine and will damage companies that are unable to adapt. Investors, however, are still puzzled about how to tweak their portfolios to benefit from what seems an unstoppable technological change. ETMarkets.com's Chiranjeevi Chakraborty caught up with founder of Capital Mind, Deepak Shenoy, to talk about e-vehicles and the companies he sees benefiting the most from this technological disruption.
Welcome to the show, Mr. Shenoy. It's really great to have you on our platform. Before we delve into our main theme of the show, I can't help but ask you, what do you make of this taperless tantrum that we are seeing in the global bond market? And is this really a cause of concern for you at this point of time?
Hi, Chiranjeevi. Glad to be on the show. The more I've seen of bond markets in general, or in the fact that it's throwing a tantrum now worldwide, is I suppose because of the fear of inflation and a rising rate regime that might come through. But I think this is going to be short-lived. Inflation is unlikely to continue in any meaningful way, in my view. Although you had signs, I don't think they will last. The world is actually far more efficient than it used to be, and eventually inflation numbers will come down. But also that interest rates cannot be held high through a recovery. You haven't recovered yet. We've seen some public market listed companies announce good results, but that does not mean the economy has recovered. The economy has a long way to go, and if you increase interest rates now, it will basically stunt the economy for the next 1 year, and we really can't afford that. No country in the world can. So I believe bond yields will come back by strong central bank action. Even if they have to purchase bonds, they will, and they've done it for the last 10 years. India is new to this game, so India will also do it. And I just don't see the specter of inflation hitting us in any meaningful way. Inflation is actually coming down, not going up.
Great. That should be, that should ease a lot of fear that we have seen today. Now, moving on to the main, focus area of our conversation. Tesla's entry into India has finally got the conversation starting around e-vehicles in India. How bullish are you about the prospect of this segment, in the years to come?
So, I'm very positive. We actually started a electric vehicle portfolio at Capital Mind about 3 years ago. We were way too early, perhaps. But that portfolio is actually starting to do good now. It's two factors here. Firstly, the advances in battery technology and some kind of standardization over there. So, that is one layer. So that has happened considerably from 2017 to now. We have much better battery technology, though it's not cheaper in any meaningful way yet. It'll eventually, in the next 2 or 3 years, reduce price quite substantially. Half the price of your electric vehicle is usually the battery. And now it's come down to one third. It'll probably come to one fifth at some point. The second part is advances in grids. So in India, the problem has always been the grid. Today, India is actually a power surplus country. So we might actually see a lot of urban areas overstocked with power. There will be no longer-term limitation of whether you're able to recharge your vehicle or not. And according to me, this plays a very key role, because once you have general availability of power and lower battery costs, your total cost of ownership of an electric vehicle is actually substantially cheaper. Forget the green. The green is unnecessary. It's just cheaper to run an electric vehicle than it is to run a regular vehicle. And electric vehicles are far more powerful. You have to actually step them down and lower the power in order to be able to use them on the road. So a good electric vehicle will actually last you a long time, will not probably even need service for the first 3 or 4 years. And perhaps the biggest element of service would be a battery replacement. And finally, of course, you have the fact that it's noiseless. So forget the green part of it not emitting fumes, but it's noiseless as well. So it gives you a better ride. So in that context, I think electric vehicles are going to take over the market at some point, not because they're green, but because they're cheaper.
So of course, as you mentioned that you already had a very focused portfolio around this theme. Which are the company or companies that you are backing in this space to adapt to the entire e-vehicle phenomena, and your thoughts on them, if you could shed some light on them?
So it's a little early to pinpoint companies, perhaps even now, and we were very early in 2017. The problem really is that who wins? So is it the battery companies that currently exist or new battery companies? Kind of battery companies that currently exist have a supply chain that is, the distribution chain is there. The supply chain and the manufacturing is all geared towards batteries that we currently know, which is, it's a different cell. So what you need in an electric vehicle right now is a lithium ion cell. There have been people trying to do something with ceramic cells, with not using lithium because relatively lithium is more expensive to get. Or mine, but the bigger problem with lithium ion battery is actually cobalt, because although cobalt is more easily available, it is about much more. The lithium is only about 3% of the battery. There is also the fact that if you look at the battery companies, I think the bigger play is going to be going forward. But there are other players. So for instance, there's a company called Power Grid, which is moved out of ABB. Of course, we own this company as a disclosure, but it's interesting because it actually has the capability of doing a lot of grid infrastructure for urban areas. They're doing something in Chennai right now, which will allow for electric vehicle charging. So that infrastructure will, so these guys provide the tools and pickaxes for the electric vehicle industry. The guys who actually produce the cars will benefit, of course. People who produce the cars are currently Tata Motors has a lead here, but Maruti has Suzuki, which has investment in this infrastructure. There is Leyland, which has acquired some. There is JBM Auto, which has some technology, I think, from China. China is the biggest player here, in the sense they have the most advanced technology in electric vehicles. So we'll have to borrow, buy technology from them at some point in time. So the battery players are one, the grid players are one, the car players directly are one. Then the people who make motors, there is very little known about which ones will actually succeed. There's maybe CG Power at one end, which has now been taken over by the Chola group. There is a few other motor manufacturers which haven't shown a lot of promise in terms of getting into electric, like Igarashi or a couple of others. So it's a relatively new space, so we don't know who will win, but you can make your bets. You'll have to put them into different slots, battery, this thing. So it, I don't think we'll know who the winners are, but it's better to have a broader portfolio than a narrow one. Because if you have a broader portfolio, some of them will definitely win. Some of them will not, because they'll get replaced by some other players who will come in. And if you're okay with that kind of a portfolio where you lose 50% of your companies will not make you much money, but maybe 10 or 15% is only those that will make you any money. That mentality needs to be there, saying I'm willing to do that. Only then would you want to start betting on a portfolio like this right now.
Right. While thinking about e-vehicles, another thought that came to my mind is, of course, we know the components and the entire parts that are involved in e-vehicles, and they are themselves a story, as you mentioned, battery makers and grid providers and all that. But what does this do for the power sector in India? I mean, I'm assuming that once e-vehicles go mainstream, it will lead to a surge in demand for power. Do you think that can also be a proxy play in this entire e-vehicle story?
No. How much power do you think a battery needs to charge? It's like saying, people are using a lot of mobile phones in India. We need a We need to invest in power companies. It's a very, very, it's not even, you know, relatively, it's a very small thing. And, you know, considering that if that logic is correct, people charge their batteries at night. They're not going to, their charging in the day will be relatively small. So if you want to take that logic, then you would say, I want to bet on coal-based power plants because solar doesn't work at night and wind is nowhere close. So, so I don't think that makes any sense from a power, betting on the power generator. It's like 7 or 8 steps removed. And you never know how eventually some of these things will get charged. You might have a solar cell inside. India has a lot of you know, solar energy naturally. So eventually you might see part of it coming from you know, charging devices that that are built into vehicles, homes, and it may be completely new player. It may not even be the current power player. So I don't think it's useful to make that bet. They're more direct bets, not worth going so indirect.
Right, great. You know, of course, every tech disruption has its winners and losers. Can you give us some examples of the kind of companies that will, you know, fall behind or are probably at risk of suffering the most from this shift in consumer preference that we may see in the next 10 to 15 years?
Yes, I mean, it's relatively easy to do that because you can look at electric, it has so few moving parts. So if you make a compressor for an AC, you're fine because the AC will still be needed. But will you still need spark plugs? Will you still need certain engine components or certain mechanical components like a differential? Do you need a mechanical differential anymore? You can use something called you know, automated braking in order to achieve the same thing that a differential does. Do you really need you know, an MPFI engine? Do you need all the components around it? There are people, the companies that manufacture all this stuff that are relatively big now. So you know, for that, I think those will. But there's bigger, the ecosystem itself. If a car doesn't need service, if you look at the model of a regular car dealer, he makes X on a car when he sells it. That's okay. It's a nice thing. But he makes more, most of his money from spares, from service, from a bunch of other things like insurance, loans, and all that stuff. So out of this, only the insurance and loans will remain, because if you think about it, these cars don't need that many spares. They are not that many moving parts. There is also no relatively low service requirements. So where you go to your service station once a year or twice a year, and they say, oh, we'll change the oil, we'll change this, we'll change that filter, we'll change this filter. You don't need all those filters. There's nothing, there's no need for a lot of the, you know, like a fuel filter. You don't need a fuel filter in an electric car. So there is actually, you know, a substantial model change for dealerships. If you don't have dealerships, then Tesla doesn't, because it sells direct, because it can't compensate the dealers meaningfully, right? So, eventually, you will have car manufacturers sell direct. You will have a relatively lower number of dealerships and more maybe service centers who just about help you fix your battery and or a few moving parts. And then, you know, that whole model changes. That whole model completely goes backward. So if you look at the ecosystem there's real estate, there is, you know, a bunch of things that go around these things. So if you look at the disruptive model, it's like, it's not going to hurt just dealers, but the entire ecosystem around it, the employment that it generates, the relative presence in the locality, the earnings and so on. So that these are disruptive influences that hurt some, but they will create more. So where you earlier you had mobile service companies or mobile service centers, and relatively they have come down now because mobiles don't need that kind of service. TV service centers, hardly any TVs get repaired now. Just people don't stop working. People just you know, throw them away for the most part. So the number of TV repair shops, which may have been 100 at some point, have now fallen to maybe 10. So that disruption is going to be clear after some time. But I think the disruption will also happen in economics will change. So some companies will have to adopt. So if you're making a product today that is primarily used in internal combustion engines, you're going to have to adapt your, and move to whatever is required in cars. And maybe the shape and the size of cars will also change. It wasn't efficient to make small, tiny cars because, the engine required a certain size to happen. But it's not so in an electric car. So why can't you have much smaller car-shaped vehicles or golf cart type of vehicles doing a lot of stuff inside where currently, it's not coherent. So there'll be new business models that will come. So it will result in the same people perhaps running different businesses, but those businesses that they currently run will have to shut down or adapt.
Definitely. Mr. Chinoy, my last question to you is a bit more about your way of tackling these technological disruptions that we see around us almost every day. As a fund manager, you always have to stay on your toe. But could you shed some light on what is your way of adopting to the disruption and also making your portfolio ready for these sort of disruption?
Yes, so in the PMS that we have, we moved the portfolio quite substantially to a lot of the disruptive elements. And one of them, for instance, we have a lot of the technology disruptors. One example was IndiaMart. I mean, of course, this is not a suggestion or a recommendation, but because these are risky plays inherently. But if you think about it, companies like Dixon, companies like IndiaMart, companies like Naukri, which owns now about 17 or 18% of Zomato, and a bunch of other companies as well. These are companies that have changed the marketplace. Zomato has completely changed online delivery. IndiaMart has disrupted B2B supply discovery and perhaps some area of fulfillment. Just Dial, which also has launched a recent mart to compete, has earlier disrupted part of the listing spaces and now is getting into B2B listing. So there are lots of these companies that come. So you might say, I might continue to hold some of the older players and then buy some of the newer players. So for instance, ABB Power India is part of our portfolio. It's not because we know that its all its revenues will come from electric and so on like that. But we just see that the scope of potential for it to adapt to electric, if it were to come, is substantially higher than some of the other players. So we have that in our portfolio, and eventually weights will shift to those who are winners. The idea is to have these companies in the portfolio, at least even a tracking position to start with. As they demonstrate their ability to execute, you want to increase their positions and reduce some of the earlier ones. So we have a lot of tech players. We have disruptive players in the pharma space, in the technology space, in the listing space, and in the electric vehicle / power grid space there. But the big thing about portfolio construction is to not consider that these things will happen overnight. Nothing will happen overnight. You're going to take about a 5 to 7 year process to completely change into a different area. And like we saw with IndiaMart, what was 2,000 rupees last year, this is even before the crisis hit us, is now 8,000, 9,000 rupees. So you can have very substantial differences in valuation over a relatively short period of time when you have a disruptive influencer. We own a substantial amount of NASDAQ 100 through an ETF. That is also something where we found that disruption happens there. So Amazon has been a disruptor, but so has Apple, so has Microsoft, so has Google, so has Facebook, and each of these companies continues to disrupt. So if you want to own part of that pie, you got to own the NASDAQ 100 in some way, or at least the individual companies. But because it's so difficult, we choose to own the whole of the NASDAQ 100, which has done very well in the last 7 or 8 years. Continued lower interest rates will ensure that innovation is inexpensive to do. So you don't have any alternative cost. It's not like saying, oh, if I hadn't given this innovation some money, I would have earned so much in interest. You won't earn anything in interest. So the idea today is you have to bet on the disruptors, but at the same time, assume the disruption will take 5 to 7 years before it completes. So anything that you think of as a disruption may either not happen or may take time to realize. So you've got to take it easy. For instance, we've made bets on the building construction space, and there will be some innovation there. 8 years, no innovation. Still cement and steel. Although you have a bunch of new technologies which are far better, both from a cement perspective or from a steel perspective, we still don't use those technologies. So maybe it's a cartel, maybe it is government influence, whatever it is. But the point over here is that all disruptions may not happen just because they're superior technology. And you can't make those bets and stay with them forever. So you've got to take your bets carefully and scale them over time as they demonstrate execution. And don't be afraid of losing money. Because the point is, any disruptive influence will not be successful, and sometimes will just fail before the time comes. You know, a Fab Mall, for instance, was an online shopping mall in India before Flipkart came in, 7 or 8 years before. They failed. They failed as in they became India Plaza, and I don't know. It hasn't done anything meaningful after that. But the companies like Flipkart and Amazon took over. So it may just be the right thing at the wrong time as well. So don't be afraid of failure is my view. Of course, none of this is advice. Okay, so if you've got to do something with your portfolio, you've got to take more deeper analysis than what I've just given you. But I'm just giving some hints of what we do.
Thank you, Chiranjeevi and Mr. Shenoy. That was indeed an insightful conversation. That's it in this week's edition of Special Weekend Podcast. Do come back next Saturday for this weekly special. You can check out our regular podcast on equity markets twice every weekday.